That is a loud squeak. I'm going to ask Mr. Smoker or Marshall to call the next case.
Calling A241254, Mon et al. Appellants versus City Homes on Park Avenue Owners Association, respondent.
And go ahead, gentlemen, and keep setting up. The podium has been going up and down depending on who's approaching it, so please adjust it for your height preference. A reminder to state who you are and which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your presentation. You'll have 15 minutes, and then again, 5 minutes is reserved for rebuttal. Appellant counsel, when you're ready, looks like you are, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. It may please the court, counsel. I represent Monica Moen and Sean Thorson, the appellants in this case.
I'm sorry, was it Mr. Walls?
David McGee.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Yes. Maybe you didn't say. I checked the wrong box.
That's fine. Repeat my name as many times as you want me to. I represent two members of the association, Monica Moen and Sean Thorson, of the association, which I'm going to refer to as the association just for purposes of ease. Every month, they dutifully paid their assessments, which included reserve funding. Those reserve funds were supposed to be kept in a segregated account, and those reserve funds were collected based upon a reserve study, two of which were done by the association. The reserve study indicated that the brick facades of the structures would be covered by the reserve monies. The brick, about the same time as my clients were interested in replacing the decks, was discovered that the brick was failing.
It was now, discovered while they were actually replacing the decks, wasn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm a little...
Okay. Was it discovered while they were actually replacing the decks or before?
It was discovered simultaneously when they were doing that, but the work they were doing on the bricks, it was independent of the need for the brick to be fixed. It was found out simultaneously that the bricks were failing.
Okay, so Mr. McGee, the way I understand this, the background of this, you've got, there's 19 buildings, you've got three that are old, like 120 years, and the ones that are affected by the brick that needs the mortar work, those are the old ones.
Yes, they are. But the reserve study and the governing documents of the association make no difference between the whether the brick is, whether it's on this building or some other newer building. And so when they reserved based upon the belief that this is covered like everything else.
Where would we look in the documents, counsel, to determine whether the brick or masonry is a common element or a limited common element?
Well, you would look just basically based on the definitions of common elements, which is found in the governing documents and by statute under MCIOWA, the Minnesota Common Interest Ownership Act. That defines common elements. The brick facade here is a common element. Now, for whatever reason, they're trying to tie this deck repair to the brick. It was just a matter of when it was discovered. The brick needed to be fixed regardless of my client's desire to replace their decks. It had no impact. That brick was failing. And how do we know that? Because the resolution passed by the board said that this is a safety issue, that these bricks are going to fall and hit somebody, and they're going to hit owners or they're going to hit non-owners.
But you do agree that the decks could not continue. Was there a prohibition that the decks couldn't be finished unless this was done?
No, there's no prohibition at all. It was basically saying that the contractor said it would be best to fix the brick so that the decks can be attached. But that's like anything.
There some discussion about doing non-attached decks?
Yes.
So that in theory could have been done without...
Absolutely. Standalone decks basically saying, you know, that they're not attached to the building, they're just standalone decks. That was an option. But it wasn't an option provided to my client. What they did is they did the repairs and then sent my client the bill. And so that in and of itself is an action by the association, which I don't believe is provided for in the reserve studies that were prepared by them.
Your clients, so I want to make sure I understand that. These are separate standalone buildings, these three units, right?
Yes.
So separate, they're not contiguous, and they're not contiguous to the newer building.
That's right.
Okay, so they're each separate standalone?
They're standalone buildings, yes.
You call them the mansions, right?
Excuse me?
They call them the mansions.
The mansions, because they're old and they're 120 years. But
so they're going to say, well, you know, it would be one thing if, you know, this was all sort of one continuous building. And, you know, the brick's the brick, and, you know, it's all on the outside. It's everybody's property. But they're saying that, no, this work only benefits your clients, your units. And even if the brick is a common element on the outside, these standalone units are your problem. Why is that position wrong?
It's wrong because that's not how they reserved. That's not what the governing documents provide. That's not what the reserve studies provide. That's not what the resale disclosure documents provided. And it's not how they reserved. Now, if you have an intent to reserve and say, you know what, your unit is somewhat different, so we're going to reserve you differently so that you put more money towards, you pay more money. They didn't do that. They reserved everybody equally.
They could have done that, though, right?
They could.
They just chose not to?
It's interesting because 515B3-1151, which is the newer statute, allows them to do that. But the statute that's in place for this association, which is 515B3-115, which applies to associations prior to 2010, does not provide for that. And in fact, 114, I don't have to repeat the first couple of numbers, provides a jump site in 114 regarding assessing for reserves to 1151. No. These are all in the paperwork. These are all things that were argued. Because what was the argument at the trial court level is, should they use the reserves to pay for these repairs? And so that's what we're doing. We're arguing, yes, because the statute provides that you need to do that.
You had that in your complaint, right?
Well, they don't cite to the statute in the complaint. And again, I wasn't.
I mean, as far as the argument being a new argument.
It's not a new argument because we argued. We're not obligated to cite the statute in a complaint, but we can cite the basis, which was the reserve monies should have been used to repair these conditions.
Right.
And so that's the argument. And I'm just pointing out that the statute provides for that relief.
And didn't the association argue that we recently reviewed our reserves and we weren't able to account for the significant extra cost this brick was work was going to do, and so therefore we shouldn't be held accountable for having the money in our reserve?
The amount we're talking about is $24,000.
Mm-hmm. But okay. If you look at the number of units, that's $1,000 each.
I mean, I'm not saying that it isn't going to be a hardship, but you have to look at it from the if you turn it around, it looks like a darn hardship to my clients who've been paying dutifully every month. Now, if you're going to do something like
that, we don't have a finding as far as what caused the damage. Does that make any difference?
It doesn't make any difference because there's no dispute. It's not like any other competing cause came along. Even by reserve study.
If somehow this brick problem was caused by your clients because they were running water on their house.
Yeah. Or the deck that was there was the way they were handling that deck. I mean, that would make a difference, right?
That would make a difference. But
do we need that?
You don't need that because, number one, there was no finding of that. The only finding is that the decks were made in 1920 with old technology, and they wore out as those decks would over time. Now, if an association wants to assess differently because of a certain condition, they can do that. And what does that tell the owner? My clients then know, you know what? We're going to have to save some money because we're going to have these deck responsibilities or this brick facade is going to be our responsibility. And so what you don't do is tell them everything's the same, everybody pays the same, everything will be covered the same, and then pull the rug out from underneath them the moment they need the money. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, sorry, guys, here's a $24,000 bill. And they go, hold on. What happened to all the money I put in all those months? They go, well, yeah, we decided you should pay for it. Now, I want to talk about the betterment, because this court, the betterment. There's an argument that my client were the only ones that benefited from this, which is, as this court found in Dees versus It's a Dees case. I'm sorry. I can't remember the next name. But in the Dees case, this court found that exterior repairs benefit everybody. Because, to be honest with you, the neighbors are going to see the brick facade a lot more than my clients are, because my clients are inside the unit. And falling brick is a safety issue. Benefited everybody.
Well, they won't see it if there's a deck there, because that's why they didn't see it to begin with.
Well, it's not a matter of seeing it. It's a matter that the condition resulted in the fear that the bricks were going to collapse. And that made it a safety issue, which benefits everyone, because my clients are not the only ones that might have got hit with a brick. It might be anybody walking by.
Do the newer buildings have brick?
No, they don't. I think they have, if I'm recalling correctly, just lap siding. So, but when they made the association, they just treated everything the same.
Is there some plan that then with these brick mansions, and one of them is all brick, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest.
Because you need to tuck point them occasionally and power point them or whatever it's called occasionally.
Yeah.
Is that happening? Or?
Well, it happens periodically, I think, to the other units that maybe just have a brick facade in the front. And I'm talking off the top of my head here on that. But the fact is that the brick was mentioned, the brick needed to be maintained, and for it to be included in the reserve study, it was understanding that every unit had some level of brick. I hate to say mansions because it makes it look presumptuous of my clients. They're just old homes. Well,
the pictures kind of, at least for the one, look like, not yours, but the one to the left of yours when you're looking at the picture I saw. Anyway.
Yeah.
That kind of looks like a mansion.
Okay. Well, I can't hide from the name that's been in the vernacular. With respect to that, I don't think they comply with the statute, even if they wanted to use E2, which is the subsection which allows them to assess common expenses to less than everybody, if assess it to the ones that are benefiting. Now, the trial court found that my clients were the only ones benefiting, which I think is inconsistent with the Dees decision, but also inconsistent with the way they reserve funded. Now, there's got to be a consistency between the way they reserve and the way they spend, because otherwise, arguably, any repair, the association can go, you know, we're going to stagger these repairs in. So you got to pay for that. And then 6 months later, the next group will pay. Then 6 months later, the next group pay and say, well, we're just staggering it. So it's not everybody. Therefore, you need to pay. And they can sit on the reserve. It's not allowed because of the way the reserve is collected. It has to be used as it's collected. Otherwise, it's unfair to the owners. Because there's no way for them to budget accordingly if we're going to reserve one way, and they're going to believe that's, I'm going to get this paid for, but then when the application comes, you do it differently. If you want to reserve differently, you probably, in this case, would need to update the governing documents, because I don't think the statute provides for a differential assessment program other than uniform, but you could explore that possibility, therefore putting everybody on notice. Hey, things are different. Things are changed. And you need to make sure that you kind of reserve appropriately in the future, you know, to save your money. So, but those are my primary points. I know I have a little bit of time left, but I think I addressed all my points. So I will yield to respond, unless the court has some questions.
It appears not, Mr.
Okay,
Lee.
Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Bill Celebrezzi from the Getz & Eklund Law Firm. I represent the respondent, City Homes on Park Avenue Owners Association. I wanted to start with the elephant in the room, which is that the appellants are starting over on appeal with a new theory and new factual arguments that, as a matter of fact, they never presented before the trial court. The general rule is that a party cannot raise new legal theories and factual arguments on appeal for the first time. And that's exactly what the appellants are trying to do here. The replacement reserve statute argument that they're making now under what I'm going to call 1141, just for the sake of shorthand, that was never briefed, argued, presented to the trial court at any point until the post-trial motions. We had no notice. Sure, Your Honor pointed out that the complaint had a reference to replacement reserves. That's the one and only time.
What about summary judgment motion?
Not discussed. There's no citation to 1141 in any memorandum filed by the appellants at any point until their post-trial memo. So the respondent couldn't address and didn't have an opportunity to litigate the applicability of a statute that was never brought to our attention. The trigger of the replacement.
The district court in finding 31 said the brick in the building is a common element within the meaning of the governing documents. Do you agree?
I do agree. And that's, as counsel said, that's part of the definition.
So then it comes down to, even though it's a common element, we get into, well, is this just a betterment of their units or, you know, provides betterment to all of the condos? Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
If the bricks fall off of their units and hurt anybody, that's going to be liability for the association, right?
Under that scenario, I would agree.
So then, and you don't want the bricks to fall off and hit somebody, because then you'll have a lawsuit and then there'll be a special assessment for everybody to pay for the litigation. So why does his argument fail, that argument about it's a safety issue means it's broader than just their units to everybody? Why is he wrong?
Sure. Well, because the record clearly reflects, and there is a finding of fact, that, and you're speaking to the issue of exclusive benefit, and that's in 115E2. That's really the central issue that we litigated, right? And so on that issue, we adduced evidence at trial from the testimony of multiple witnesses that it was determined, based on the observation of the conditions on that rear elevation of their building, that the repair work that was being done to the limited common element, the decks, which are solely the financial responsibility of the appellants, could not continue until the brick repairs were done.
I thought Mr. McGee said that wasn't in the record.
That was an incorrect statement on his part. There was, in fact, a fact finding by the district court.
Is it in the district court's order?
It is.
It cannot go forward?
It is in the district court's findings of fact, yes.
Based on what evidence presented to the court?
Sure. The evidence that was presented was...
Is that the masonry? I remember the guy that...
That's right. Roger Yackley.
Roger's masonry.
Yep. Roger Yackley. So...
You don't have to look it up. You can't attach the decks if the bricks are falling off. I mean, I get that. But the separate issue is, what about the bricks? So again, what makes the bricks masonry falling off not an issue to prevent for the benefit of all the condo units?
The factual record that was adduced at trial was that, as I think the court has already acknowledged, the deck work was underway, the decks had been demoed. It was then observed that the way the decks had been originally attached to the building had been done wrong, and that also that the bricks were falling, partially as a result of the way the decks were attached, and that a conversation was had amongst the tradesmen who were there at the time that we have to stop work on the deck, we have to repair the brick, and in connection with that repair, we have to install what they called steel angle lintels to support the brick and allow for the proper structural attachment of the new decks to the building.
And so the
unique circumstance that presented was we need to do common element repairs to facilitate the completion of limited common element repairs, and we can't do the latter until the former was completed. And the judge on the record found that not only was the brick repair necessary to the completion of the deck reconstruction, but it was in fact integral to that completion.
And Everything you just said, I'm in complete agreement with. But my point is, if the, apart from all of that, why is Mr. McGee wrong when he says, if the bricks fall down because they're not repaired, just from their units, why isn't that an issue for the entire condo association? And the answer is,
Because the decks are the responsibility of the unit owners.
I'm talking about the bricks.
But the bricks are right above the decks, and the appellants have exclusive benefit. Yeah.
There's no deck. There are no decks. The decision has been made, no decks for anybody, you know? No decks. If there weren't decks, and we had the same problem with the bricks, and they're falling down just in their units, which endangers everybody, and the masonry is a common element, why isn't that issue a common expense for everybody? And the answer is?
In that situation, there would have been planned maintenance of the bricks. And the record does reflect previous repair, in one instance, on this same building.
How old is this building?
I believe it was built in the 1920s.
Okay, so, I mean, I understand that argument. If we had known the bricks were gonna fall, we would have had a greater reserve fund. Because we didn't, it indicates this was gonna be an individual expense. But the counter to that, I would make is, well, that just shows you got an incompetent board who thinks bricks put in the 1920s will last more than a century. And that's my response. Now,
sure.
Why am I wrong?
In general, this board and all of the boards that had existed prior to it had been reserving for common element maintenance at all time. And in fact, the record...
And they thought the bricks would last forever?
Well, they had repair happening beginning in 2025. This record specifically reflects, and the court found, that this repair work was unexpected and that it was not identified in the reserve studies. So I did want to focus on my argument about this is a new statutory theory. Their argument is that 1141 essentially prohibits the board from levying this assessment under 115E2. They've never discussed that until now. It would be unfair to my clients for the court to entertain that argument, and we hope that you will refuse to do so. But of course, I understand it's your prerogative to look at it if you so decide.
You're a fan of entertaining your arguments on appeal.
So
I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say that.
If you do look at it, I would like to point out the following language, which I think is dispositive of their argument that 1141 controls. They are citing 1141A5. That's the primary thrust of their argument. And they note that that subdivision provides an exception for discretionary assessments. Actually, it provides an exception for reserve assessments for assessments levied under 1151E2, and it specifically references that other provision, as counsel indicated. And if you go to 1151, if you go to subsection C, 1151 corresponds with 1141 by saying the association may also levy assessments against fewer than all units as provided by subsections E, F, and G. An assessment under subsection E2 for replacement reserves is subject to the requirements of 1141A5. And they somehow derive from that because 1115, which is the common expense assessment provision that actually applies to respondent, because it doesn't have that language, that somehow that means that our assessment was prohibited. But again, I would refer the court to 1115D. 1115D says, except as modified by subsections A1 and 2, E, F, and G, All common expenses shall be assessed against all the units in accordance with the allocations established by the declaration. 115D doesn't subject common expense assessments to fewer than all units to the approval requirements of 1141A5. It's different than 1151. And if you look at the legislative history of these three statutes, I think it becomes clear that the legislature intended not to subject common or discretionary assessments under 115E2 to the approval requirements of 1141A5. 115 was enacted in 1993. It was reviewed seven times over the years, including in 2011. In 2011, the legislature enacted 1141 and 1151. So they were looking at all these issues in that legislative session, and they opted not to amend 1115D to require discretionary assessments under E2 to be subject to the approval requirements of 1141A5. And at no point since 2011 has the legislature reflected any intent that discretionary assessments under 115E2 are subject to those approval requirements. In our summary judgment memorandum way back when, document number 22 at page 16, we cited a variety of cases for the proposition that courts are bound by a statute as written and may not supply by construction that which the legislature purposefully omits or inadvertently overlooks. So it's our position that even if you get to their new replacement reserves theory, the statutory language simply doesn't support it.
And I get all that. My question is, apart from the statute, so your position is that even though this masonry is a common element, your position is this common element work benefits fewer than all units. It just benefits those two.
Yes, it wasn't just our position.
So then getting back to my, so you're saying if the brick falls and hits somebody, that's not going to be a problem for all units. It's just going to be a problem for the two units, right?
Well.
And I'm saying I don't think that's right. So why am I wrong?
Well, I guess I think what I'm bound to do here, Your Honor, is to rely on what the findings were by the district court.
Right, and I'm saying I don't think I agree with them.
The district court found on the issue of exclusive benefit that the timing of this repair, the interrelationship between this repair and the deck work, the fact that the deck work couldn't continue, and in fact, Ms. Moan was told that day by the deck contractor that that work couldn't continue. And frankly, the undisputed evidence in the record at trial was that that work couldn't continue.
I agree.
Right. That was the basis for the judge's finding.
Yep. And I'm saying, you're right. I totally get that. And I'm saying my reading of the declarations and, God forbid, the application of basic common sense would suggest it is everybody's problem, not just the unit. I mean, it clearly benefits their unit. I mean, to have their brick fixed in their unit, no doubt about it. But I'm also thinking it benefits everyone, and under the declarations. And I'm just trying to say, how do you get around the safety argument that if the bricks fall and hit anybody, it's the entire, they're not going to sue just the two units, they're going to sue the entire condo association. So I think it does kind of benefit all the association. And Judge Werke, his time is up.
Please answer the question. Yes.
My answer to that would be that with respect to any repair, there's obviously going to be a safety consideration. Here, that consideration did not override the district court's determination. I think the last point I would make is that the issue here is whether the board acted in good faith in reaching the decision it made.
I have no doubt they did.
And I think
I'm just thinking it was wrong.
Well, but even if Your Honor concludes it was wrong, if the court concludes it was wrong, it shouldn't change the outcome because the board acted in good faith in reaching the determination.
That relates to the implied covenant of good faith argument. And I think that's, you know, you can make a bad decision and not act in bad faith. I do not believe that the board was acting in bad faith in retaliation for prior litigation made by Mr. McGee's clients. I'm just going to tip my hand and say, nope. This was their interpretation of the documents, and I'm just saying from my own perspective, not of my treasurer colleagues, I read the documents a little differently, but, you know, maybe I'm wrong, so we'll see.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your argument.
Yeah, thanks.
I'd like to just address a few points.
Well, I want to bring up a point, Mr. McGee.
Oh, go,
so,
please.
You know, based on what Judge Connolly has been posing to respondent counsel, so tell me this. If the decks had not been removed, this problem would never have come to light, right?
It wouldn't have. The problem existed.
So
it wouldn't have come to light.
So the fact that your clients demoed the decks led to the discovery of the problem.
Yes, led to the discovery. It didn't lead to the cause.
Right, but if the decks just stayed and your clients didn't do anything, they didn't want to have a fancier deck or whatever it may be, then so what?
So then the bricks start falling on people's heads.
So don't you have to show then something with causation? I'm not sure where I'm going.
No, it's just basically, Your Honor, under the reserve study, it's wear and tear and age. Basically, those are the conditions that have to exist. In this context, the only evidence...
The age existed all the time, and had they not taken the deck off, then it wouldn't have mattered.
Well, I think that discovery precipitated the brick condition, but the brick condition was there. There's absolutely no evidence in the record that the installation or looking at the decks caused this brick to fail. This brick failed over age.
That the deck, whatever, the new deck couldn't go forward unless...
Oh, absolutely.
I misunderstood you. I thought you said it had no bearing on it.
No, I said it has no bearing on the obligation of the association to address the bricks, whether there's no decks or different decks or they just left them alone.
But if the decks had stayed on there, there wouldn't be a safety issue.
No. Well, the brick is failing.
But it wasn't known. The decks were there. They could have went another 10, 20 years.
Well, granted, but it doesn't...
So isn't it also true the deck could have fallen down to...
Oh, yeah.
Not the deck, the whole wall.
Oh, the whole wall?
The whole building.
The whole. I mean, there's
once you got a bulge in brick, you got a problem.
Yes. I mean, I would argue that...
Water has infiltrated and ruined your brick.
Yeah. So my argument would be is... Yeah, they discovered it at the time they were looking at the decks, but the fact is that tying, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but in this case, they're saying we're responsible for replacing all the brick because we wanted to do this little area here. And I don't think that's the law, and I don't think that's the case. Now, with respect to the reserve study, council indicated that it was earlier that this repair was 2021 versus 2025. The reserve studies are estimates. I mean, nobody has a crystal ball to know when something is going to need to be fixed. It's a matter of wear and tear and obsolescence, and we don't know. We can guess, we can think, we know, but the fact is that this was something that needed repair earlier than what maybe the reserve study determined. And then also with respect to the case that I couldn't remember, it's Dees versus Frost, where they talked about that the exterior maintenance benefits all. In this case, it's even more because of the fact that we have falling bricks. And I think in that context, there is much more significance to the benefit. Also, I would disagree with council that the issue of the decks was the primary driving force. The association passed a resolution, and in that resolution, they didn't mention anything about the decks. The word deck is not mentioned. They said they need to be fixed for safety reasons. That was it. So I wasn't a trial attorney. Obviously, I can't speak to what was done. But I can tell you this much. When, in this case, they talked about that the payments should have been from the reserve because the reserve needs to mirror how it's being applied. You don't reserve one way and then apply it somewhere else, as they would say. They don't make my client pay for something. Then when it's time for that thing to be fixed, say, you know what? we're going to make you pay for that yourself. That is not what the legislature intended. And if you read our brief, I think it's in the reply, pages 15 through 18, I think you'll see the analysis we undertake on that point. So with that, I appreciate your time. Absent any questions, yes?
I just have a kind of a fundamental question. You've got these three mansions.
Yeah.
And then you've got these other units.
Yeah.
What do they look like? Are they duplexes or are they single family? Usually a condominium is a big building with a lot of apartments.
I think what happened, this became a planned unit development where the other structures were built around the mansions. And so they had their own configuration in the sense of design. But the mansions were there to, for lack of a better way of saying it, to increase the value because they look pretty, and the other units. So yes, it was kind of a planned unit development using existing structures. So, absent that, thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. If there is such a thing as an enjoyable oral argument, that would be one. I appreciate you coming today. The matters are under advisement.
Thank you.
Mr. Chilabrese, please give me-